This is the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of 1 Samuel. Today on Sandy Adams Radio, Pastor Sandy will begin in 1 Samuel chapter 17.
Now, when the words which David spoke were heard, they reported them to Saul, and he sent for him. Saul has finally found a willing warrior, and he immediately sends for David. Then David said to Saul, "Let no man's heart fail because of him. Your servant will go and fight with this Philistine." And Saul said to David, "You are not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for you are a youth, and he a man of war from his youth. David, you're just a kid. You'll be slaughtered by this battle-tested Goliath." But David explains, he's not without his own experiences. He said to Saul, "Your servant used to keep his father's sheep. And when a lion or a bear came and took a lamb out of the flock, I went out after it and struck it and delivered the lamb from its mouth. And when it arose against me, I caught it by its beard and struck and killed it. Your servant has killed both lion and bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, seeing he has defied the armies of the living God." Wow, what courage, what faith. Moreover, David said, "The Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear, he will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine." God had delivered David from the mouth of hungry lions and hungry bears. Why can't God deliver him from a big mouth Philistine? David's confidence is in the Lord. And Saul said to David, "Go." He was impressed. "Go, and the Lord be with you." But he makes a mistake. So Saul clothed David with his armor, and he put a bronze helmet on his head. He also clothed him with a coat of mail. David fastened his sword to his army, and he tried to walk, for he had not tested them. And I'm sure he kind of stumbled around, fell on his face. And David said to Saul, "I cannot walk with these, for I have not tested them." So David took them off. Saul isn't brave enough to fight Goliath, but he sends his armor out with David. And yet when David suits up, Saul's armor doesn't fit. It's obvious. You know, when God calls you to fight, take what you know will work. Don't trust in somebody else's program. Don't trust in somebody else's gimmick. Take what God has proven to be true to you. When you're up against a giant, that's not the time to start looking for different techniques and different tactics. Faith rests on what it knows to be true. Faith doesn't get desperate. It doesn't start canvassing the self-help stores, you know, looking for the newest and the latest. David takes a couple of steps in Saul's armor, and he starts shedding it. He says in verse 39, "I cannot walk with these, for I have not tested them." David trusts in what he's tried and what he's tested. A single slingshot killed the lions and the bears. It'll drop this giant too. David will fight clothed with faith, not in somebody's oversized armor. And there's a lesson here for us. If the Bible, if prayer, if the power of the Holy Spirit has strengthened saints for centuries and sustained believers in the throes of death and worked miracles and won victories and even slain giants in Jesus' name, then why should I feel I need to adopt the latest Christian fad? For 2,000 years, the church did fine before Rick Warren's purpose-driven church or Bill Hybels' seeker-sensitive model. Now, hey, I'm not complaining. I'm not criticizing. God has used these methods with Rick and with Bill. But rather than strap on their armor, I've got to trust in what God has shown me. So many times we think the Bible's not enough, that prayer's not enough, that the power of the Holy Spirit's not enough. And so we think we've got to adopt all these little things that are going on out there. Trust me. God has given us the tools in His Word, through prayer, through His Spirit, that have won many, many a victory before this latest fad came along. It has sustained the church in the throes of persecution, and over countless centuries, it'll work for you too. Don't worry. Well, this is what David does, verse 40. Then he took his staff in his hand, and he chose for himself 5 smooth stones from the brook and put them in a shepherd's bag in a pouch which he had, and his sling was in his hand, and he drew near to the Philistine. And of course, the question always arises, why did David pick up 5 smooth stones? Was he afraid he'd miss? Did he need 5 shots? No, no, no. We learn in 2 Samuel chapter 21 that Goliath had 4 brothers. True. David was planning 1 shot for Goliath, and then if his brothers wanted to jump in the fray, he'd knock them out too. That's why he took 5 smooth stones. So the Philistines came and began drawing near to David, and the man who bore the shield went before him. And when the Philistine looked about and saw David, he disdained him, for he was only a youth, ruddy and good-looking. And so the Philistine said to David, "Am I a dog that you come to me with sticks?" And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. One commentator has suggested that when Goliath lifted his head to his supposed gods, his helmet fell off, leaving his forehead unprotected and providing David a clear shot. Wouldn't that be ironic? As he's lifting his head to his gods, he exposes himself. And the Philistine said to David, "Come to me, and I will give your flesh to the birds of the air and the beasts of the field." Then David said to the Philistine, "You come to me with a sword, with a spear, and with a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defiled. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hand, and I will strike you and take your head from you." David's certainly not intimidated, is he? "And this day I will give the carcasses of the camps of the Philistines to the birds of the air and the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. Then all this assembly shall know that the Lord does not save with sword and with spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands." David went out with the end of this battle clothed with armor, trust me. But it wasn't Saul's armor. It was the armor of God. It was the belt of truth and the breastplate of righteousness and the spikes of peace and the shield of faith and the helmet of salvation and the sword of the Spirit, which is the Word of God. David went out clothed in armor, all right, but not Saul's armor. It was the armor of God. Verse 48. "So it was when the Philistine arose and came and drew near to meet David, that David hastened and ran toward the army to meet the Philistine. Then David put his hand in his bag and took out a stone, and he slung it, and he struck the Philistine in the forehead, so that the stone sank into his forehead, and he fell on his face to the earth." Boom! David took aim. He twirled his sling, and then he slung that stone through the air. And I don't think it was just that David was a good shot. I think at the very moment that stone left his sling, God took over the trajectory of that rock to ensure that it landed right between the 2 big fat eyeballs on Goliath's head. I believe God took that stone and made sure it landed between the eyes that David had looked into so fearlessly and so squarely. And I'll bet you the thud was heard all the way back in Bethlehem. Mighty Goliath didn't know what hit him. The stone sank into his forehead and he fell on his face. So David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and a stone and struck the Philistine and killed him. But there was no sword in the hand of David. Therefore David ran and stood over the Philistine, took his sword. It probably took both hands for little David to lift up Goliath's mighty sword, for this middle schooler to pick up the warrior's sword. And he drew it out of his sheath and killed him and chopped off his head with it. With one swoop of Goliath's sword, David chopped off the giant's head. God had given him the victory. The camp of Israel was supercharged by God's victory. The Philistines were deflated. David was triumphant. Israel had finally gotten ahead. A rout was on. And when the Philistines saw that their champion was dead, they fled. Now the men of Israel and Judah arose and shouted and pursued the Philistine as far as the entrance of the valley into the gates of Ekron. And the wounded of the Philistines fell along the road to Shaaraim, even as far as Gath and Ekron. Then the children of Israel returned from chasing the Philistines, and they plundered their tents. And David took the head of the Philistine and brought it to Jerusalem, but he put his armor in his tent, kept the head as a trophy. When Saul saw David going out against the Philistine, he said to Abner, the commander of the army, "Abner, whose son is this youth?" And Abner said, "As your soul lives, O king, I do not know." So the king said, "Inquire whose son this young man is." Then as David returned from the slaughter of the Philistine, Abner took him and brought him before Saul with the head of the Philistine in his hand. What a picture. David holding Goliath's head by his hair, blood still dripping from his severed aorta. What a picture. And Saul said to him, "Whose son are you, young man?" And so David answered, "I am the son of your servant Jesse, the Bethlehemite." Chapter 18. Now when he had finished speaking to Saul, the soul of Jonathan was knit to the soul of David. And Jonathan loved him as his own soul. You remember, Jonathan was also a man of faith. Remember his venture of faith back in chapter 14, his daring venture of faith? With David's victory over Goliath, Jonathan sees in David a kindred spirit. They both love God. They're both jealous for God's glory. Aristotle once wrote, "Friendship is a single soul dwelling in two bodies." This was the case with David and Jonathan. They had so much in common, and they became fast friends. Saul took David that day and would not let him go home to his father's house anymore. He became a permanent member of Saul's court. Verse 3, "Then Jonathan and David made a covenant, because he loved him as his own soul. And Jonathan took off the robe that was on him and gave it to David with his armor, even to his sword and his bow and his belt." Now, this was a deeply devoted friendship despite being fraught with complications. Understand the dynamic between David and Jonathan. As Saul's son, Jonathan had the right of succession to the throne. Jonathan was destined to be king in Saul's dynasty. He was Saul's successor. But David was God's choice. David had a spiritual claim, and you can see the potential conflict between these two men. And yet, despite that conflict, Jonathan never once resented God's appointment of David. It's amazing. As a matter of fact, here Jonathan submits to David's authority by surrendering to him his sword. This is a powerful action on his part. I think it's a credit to both men that they remained friends and through it all never became rivals. Well, verse 5 says, "So David went out whenever Saul sent him and behaved wisely. And Saul set him over the men of war." David was the head of the IDF. Israel's Department of Defense. "And he was accepted in the sight of all the people, and also in the sight of Saul's servants. Now it had happened as they were coming home, when David was returning from the slaughter of the Philistine, that the women had come out of all the cities of Israel, singing and dancing, to meet King Saul with tambourines, with joy, with musical instruments. And so the women sang as they danced and said, 'Saul has slain his thousands and David his 10,000s. David grows so popular that he develops his own fan club. They're singing, they're dancing in the streets. Saul has slain his thousands, but David has slain his 10,000s. And how do you think Saul reacted to getting second billing? Oh my. Verse 8. "Then Saul was very angry, and the saying displeased him. And he said, 'They have ascribed to David 10,000s, and to me they have ascribed only thousands. Now what more can he have but the kingdom?'" Saul doesn't like being the undercard. David is more popular than the king, and Saul is jealous. And so Saul eyed David from that day forward. Guys, beware of jealousy. If God uses you to slay thousands, be happy with that. I'll take that. Don't get jealous, though, when God uses your brother or your sister to slay tens of thousands. F.B. Meyer warns us, jealousy is one of the worst temptations that can beset us. It arises in the most unexpected ways and times. When everyone around us is possessed by a common joy, it steals in like a ghost and settles down on some heart when it scourges with whips of fury. Resist its first entrance. While I'm glorifying God, I notice the work that God has done through another person, and I become jealous. Beware, jealousy is a slippery sin. And it happened on the next day that the distressing spirit from God came upon Saul. Notice what happens when he harbors sin in his heart. He's inviting this distressing spirit back. And he prophesied inside the house. So David played music with his hand as at other times, but there was a spear in Saul's hand. Suddenly, out of nowhere, Saul erupts in this demonically inspired rage. And Saul cast the spear, for he said, "I will pin David to the wall." But David escaped his presence, and it happened twice. Saul chunks the spear at David's head. "I'm going to pin him against the wall," which teaches us, never put a javelin next to a jealous person. Nor a telephone, nor an email, nor an instant messaging, nor a little chat line. There are a lot of ways to pin an innocent person against a wall. Beware of jealousy. It's amazing that David never tried to do to Saul what he had done to Goliath. He could have pulled Saul's spear out of the wall and chunked it back. Ever thought of that? But Saul was not an uncircumcised Philistine. He was Israel's king. He was God's anointed. And David knew that one day he would be king. And he expected others to honor his appointment. Therefore, he needed to honor Saul's appointment. Again, David was a man motivated by principle, not convenience. He was a man motivated by conviction, not anger or revenge or circumstance. Verse 12. Now Saul was afraid of David because the Lord was with him, but had departed from Saul. Therefore Saul removed him from his presence. In other words, the royal court was no longer big enough for both David and Saul. And made him his captain over 1,000, and he went out and came in before the people. And David behaved wisely in all his ways, and the Lord was with him. Therefore when Saul saw that he behaved very wisely, he was afraid of him. But all Israel and Judah loved David because he went out and came in before them. Then Saul said to David, "Here is my older daughter Merab. I will give her to you as a wife. Only be valiant for me and fight the Lord's battles." Now you recall, Saul was in David's debt. He had promised a daughter to the man who killed Goliath. But Saul's motive here is not to pay off a debt or to make a promise. He has some ulterior motives. Notice, for Saul thought, "Let my hand not be against him, but let the hand of the Philistines be against him." He's going to create a little ruse here, whereby he's going to send David out in harm's way, and hopefully the Philistines will kill David rather than Saul have to do the dirty work. So David said to Saul, "Who am I and what is my life?" Notice his humility. "Or my father's family in Israel, that I should be son-in-law to the king." But it happened at the time when Merab, Saul's daughter, should have been given to David, that she was given to Adriel, the Meholathite, as a wife. And why this happened, we're not sure. But certainly it was a hurtful act on Saul's part. Promise David your daughter, and then at the last minute, right before the wedding and the honeymoon, you just jerk her right out and you give her to another man. It was obviously designed to tear into David's heart. But Saul has another daughter, and Saul is shrewd. And maybe he can use Michal to put an end to his rival David. So he says, now Michal, Saul's daughter, loved David. And they told Saul, and the thing pleased him. And here's why. So Saul said, I will give her to him that she may be a snare to him, and that the hand of the Philistines may be against him. Therefore Saul said to David a second time, you shall be my son-in-law today. And Saul commanded his servants, communicate with David secretly and say, look, the king is delighted in you, and all his servants love you. Now therefore become the king's son-in-law. So Saul's servants spoke these words in the hearing of David. And David said, does it seem to you a light thing to be a king's son-in-law, seeing I am a poor and lightly esteemed man? In other words, David is concerned that he can't afford the dowry of a princess. You understand the customs in those days. The wife came with a dowry. And surely a princess, she commanded a large dowry. And David's afraid. He's a humble man. He comes from poor means. Can he ever afford the dowry of a princess? And the servants of Saul told him, saying, in this manner David spoke. Then Saul said, thus you shall say to David, the king does not desire any dowry, but 100 foreskins of the Philistines to take vengeance on the king's enemies. So Saul thought to make David fall by the hand of the Philistines. Now, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to realize that no red-blooded Philistine is going to give up his foreskin without a fight. I've never been in such a fight, but I would imagine if you're fighting for your foreskin, you're going to be pretty fierce. You're going to be pretty serious about the battle. And Saul figures that surely one of the 100 angry Philistines are going to trump David. By the way, for you golfers in the crowd, this is the first skins game in history. Did you? Verse 26. So when his servants told David these words, it pleased David well to become the king's son-in-law. Now the days had not expired. Therefore David arose and went, he and his men, and killed 200 men of the Philistines. And David brought their foreskins. And I don't know whether he did it. He brought them in a basket or, you know, like one of those strings, you know, with a fishing string. I don't know how he brought them to Saul, but anyway. And David brought their foreskins, probably threw them out on the, I don't know. And they gave them in full count. They counted them, full count to the king, that he might become the king's son-in-law. Then Saul gave him Michal, his daughter, as a wife. Saul had asked for 100 foreskins. David pays a double dowry, 200 foreskins. And this makes Saul furious. Thus Saul saw and knew that the Lord was with David, and that Michal, Saul's daughter, loved him. And Saul was still more afraid of David. So Saul became David's enemy continually. Then the princes of the Philistines went out to war. And so it was, whenever they went out, that David behaved wisely, more wisely than all the servants of Saul, so that his name became highly esteemed. You see, all that Saul does to harm David backfires on Saul. David grows in stature while Saul continues to shrink.
In the book of 1 Samuel, you get to meet a boy who became a man, helping guide and counsel others after him. The era of the kings of Israel began with the events of this book of the Bible. As you read along, you notice that some people followed God with all their heart. Others seemed to waver, depending on how the situation would benefit them. What is the state of your interactions with God? Do you follow him wholeheartedly, or does it depend on if it'll help you out in the circumstances that you're in? It's definitely something to ponder as you listen and learn more about these characters in the Bible. There's always something for you to gain from those who have lived before you. Spend time praying today, asking the Lord to reveal the areas in your life that may be showing your commitment to God or lack thereof. You've been listening to Sandy Adams Radio Today with our pastor and teacher, Sandy Adams. To learn more about this ministry, head over to sandyadams.org. Once again, that's sandyadams.org. While you're there, check out Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain under the About tab. You could even stop by and see us this weekend. The details of where we meet and when can be found once you follow the link to Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain. Well, that's all we have time for today, but we'll catch up with you next time on Sandy Adams Radio.